Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. I'm Dave Kubikin.
And good morning. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
Jane Marie and I are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm, and we're here every weekend talking to you about estate planning and Medicaid planning, elder law, wills, trusts, guardianships, estate administrations, all that good stuff. And we're also here to take your phone calls. You can be our first caller or our second or third caller later on by calling 518-476-5900. And if you want to schedule an appointment with one of us or Debbie or Harry, you could always call our office at 518-465-7581. Jane Marie, good morning. What's going on?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing real well. I think it's going to be a nice day. I saw some cold temperatures next week, but I'm in spring mode. I haven't
Did
worn
socks.
Did you
get a good night's sleep with the baby?
No, that's like an oxymoron. I think is the right term for that. A good night's sleep with the baby.
You're getting used to running on very little sleep now, right?
Yeah. Well, you went through this, right? You have two boys. You went through this once upon a time, I assume.
My boys slept through the night. They were perfect. That's what happens when it's been so long ago that you don't remember it, right? Remember good stuff.
I hope that's how it'll go. I mean, there's not a lot of bad stuff to remember. But we have a special show today, I hear.
Yes, I invited a special guest to join us, Blaze Bryant, and he works at Consumer Directed Choices, or CD Choices, as it's known. And good morning, Blaze. How are you?
Hey, Blaze.
Good morning, Dave, David, Jane Marie. Great to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I can't relate to the challenges of parenting. I don't have kids, but maybe, you know, knowing Jane Marie as I do, since for full disclosure, she is our board chair, and that's kind of how this connection sort of liaisoned, maybe she's making it, you know, a little bit more of a challenge here for you, David, and you know, something that you've got to overcome and persevere. So, you know, who knows?
Well, I think we could take care of everything right now. Blaze, I'm going to drop off my kids after the show. You're going to spend a week with them. We're going to persevere together. We're going to all learn something. It'll be wonderful.
I can't promise that your kids won't come back, you know, corrupted in some way, shape, or form. Because I am many things, but a babysitter is not one of them. So,
okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
So I know what CD Choices does, and David knows, of course, what consumer-directed home care is. But Blaze, why don't you describe to us what CD Choices does and what you do there? Okay.
Certainly. So I am the Communications and Outreach Associate at Consumer Directed Choices. What we do at Consumer Directed Choices is we work with seniors and people with disabilities who hire their own home care staff, people that they know and trust to come into their home and help them with their home care needs, whether that be bathing, dressing, grooming, laundry, grocery shopping, going through the mail, things of that sort of nature, home care tasks. For full disclosure, I am a consumer who utilizes the program. I am completely blind and have an aide come in and help me with my grocery shopping and cleaning and cooking and going through the mail, those sort of things. I live very close to a firehouse, but I certainly don't want them here because of me. And the main function of Consumer Directed Choices is as a payroll and benefits processing company. We process the pay. We make sure that the aides get paid and Medicaid gets billed for those hours. And I phrase it that way because this is a program that is at no cost to the consumer. There is also what's called a designated representative. And what a designated representative does is they are responsible for the hiring, training, and supervising, recruiting, and if need be, firing on behalf of a consumer if their disability is such that they have trouble with decision making or do not want to have that much responsibility. However, they have someone in their corner who is willing and able to do that.
Blaze, if I may for a moment, I just want to reset for our audience that has heard Jamarie and I and Debbie talk, you know, weekend after weekend about this program called Community Medicaid, right? The idea of getting care in the comfort of your own confines, whether it's an apartment, a house, a room in your daughter's house, whatever it is. And within that Community Medicaid program, which, you know, rules are changing. We want people to prepare. We want people to apply if they need those kinds of services. Jamarie, there are a couple different, you know, that's a big program, Community Medicaid. Within it, though, you do have a bunch of decisions to make, such as do you want to be in charge of the caregivers and go through this consumer direct program? So, Blaze, what you're saying is that within that, right, there's this entity, CD Choices, that is going to help not only the applicant but their representative in operating this business called Mom Inc. or whatever we want to call it, and the care for mom. Is that about right?
Exactly. The real, if I were to distill it down into one sort of phrase, and I'm ripping this off from my boss, Denise DeNoto, who has joined me on the show a couple of years ago, quote, I am the CEO of me, and I am in charge of personnel, end quote. That is what the... That's really at the heart of it all. If someone said, describe the program in 15 seconds, there you go.
Gotcha.
I love it when Denise says that. That's great. So you are in charge of finding people to work for you. So Medicaid does not send you people, right? That's the big difference with this program, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And frankly, I don't know if I, and this is not to take away from anyone or anything, but I do like to be in charge. I feel that it's very important to be in charge because it's my body, it's my needs, my care. And the fact that I have the ability to hire the people that I want and train them how I need to train them and supervise them and whatnot. You know, I could probably hear someone saying, well, why would you need to train someone on grocery shopping and cleaning and cooking and putting stuff away? When you are completely blind, as I am, it is absolutely critical that if you put something back, it goes in the same place. Otherwise, then it's kind of like finding the golden egg at Easter, trying to find what you're looking for. And I did Easter egg hunts as a kid. Those were fun. That time has passed. I don't want to be looking for a coffee cup and having it feel like an Easter egg hunt.
Wait, you know, Blaze, it's not just for someone who, in your situation, right, has a particular set of needs. If someone, you know, is dealing with dementia, right, consistency is so important. And one of the negatives that we hear a lot, you know, Jamarie and I help people get qualified for this program. Our wonderful paralegals help get people qualified. And then the question is, how are they going to use the care? And so oftentimes people have a tough time finding agencies that may provide care, and they say, well, you know, but my neighbor, you know, they're willing to help. My children are willing to help. My nephews, nieces, whoever. Or, you know, dad has a certain person who's been, you know, quote unquote, off the books helping out. It sounds like CD Choices gives people the opportunity to keep the caregivers that they have always had. It's just in a more formal role.
Yeah, and a more financially friendly role, at least for the consumer, because now you're not having to shell out X amount of dollars for private pay. Jamarie, one of the things you wanted me to talk about, and I think this transitions perfectly into fair pay for home care. So allow me, if I may, to kind of go off on this route a little bit, because this leads me perfectly into it. There is a legislative campaign called the Fair Pay for Home Care Campaign. It will hopefully be in the budget some way, somehow. Providing there's an on-time budget, of course, it would be April 1st. We don't know. But the way this legislation was done is the original ask was for a 150% increase of the highest regional minimum wage. Right now, here in this area, the minimum wage is $12.50. So if this 150% increase goes into effect, that means home care workers would be paid a minimum $18.75. Now, as I was saying before, that this program is Medicaid funded. What this does, and I'm not going to sugarcoat the fact that a lot of the Medicaid plans for home care, because this is a reality, they do not pay barely above minimum wage. And it's an absolute crime. I think one of the things that I sure as heck hope the legislature has learned over this past year as we have been dealing with this pandemic is the value of home care workers, not just from a job sense. They need to be valued in a monetary sense. The Senate, I can't thank the Senate enough for including fair pay for home care in their one house budget. Is it the 150? No. The way they've set it up is that it would start at 106% of the highest regional minimum wage. I'm not doing that math. I can't do that. And then it would, in October, phase up to 112% and kind of climb from there. The Assembly, it is a standalone bill. I can't encourage you enough to, if you feel so inclined, to call your local Assembly member and tell them, and if you use home care, tell them why you do and why it's so important. And this home care wage would not just apply to consumer-directed personal assistance, or CDPA. It would apply to home care across the board. And the governor has not included it in his version of the executive budget. Those negotiations are going to be getting fast and furious here, if they haven't already, in very short due time. So that's where we are for fair pay for home care.
You know, Jamie.
I was just going to say, so that kind of tie this back to what we do talk about a lot, is we know our clients prefer home care. They'd rather stay at home than be in an institution. And sometimes we get them all qualified and they get enrolled in community Medicaid. And then when they go to find someone to work for them, because of the wages that Medicaid is paying, they can't find anyone to work for them. So many, many of our clients have a problem finding home care workers. And part of that is due to the low wages. So this is just, I think it's fantastic news. I mean, I really hope some version of this gets passed into the budget, because having more money to pay a home care worker is really going to open you up to finding more people to work for you.
Yeah, it's about a $4 billion. If the 150% were to go in the budget, it'd be about a $4 billion investment in home care, which does that sound like a lot? Sure. However, the reality is that's going to be such a good return on investment. There is data out there that shows that the return on investment would be nearly double. There is a severe home care shortage. And if we don't address it by paying home care workers more, that shortage is going to be continually amplified.
And to add to both your points, and Jamery, we were going to be saying the same thing. It's funny how our brains work. You know, the big picture, the long term, right? There are these changes that we've been talking about to the community Medicaid program in terms of qualification and whether or not and when, in fact, they'll institute a 2.5-year look-back period. And one of the things we've always talked about is how short-sighted that is, because they've historically made home care really easy to get approved for. That's great, assuming we have the caregivers ready, willing, and able to provide the care. But New York has had these rules in place, right? No look back period forever. Why? Because they want you to stay at home. They want mom to stay at home because it's cheaper for the state to pay for mom at home when she needs several hours than having her have no choice but be in a nursing home where she's getting 24/7 care. That's far more expensive because they know people will eventually qualify for the Medicaid program. So what seems so obvious to me is the things that help people stay at home longer in turn help people avoid nursing homes, which means that that saves money for the state. And so if it means we need to you know, increase the wages or increase the reimbursement rate or whatever you want to call it to the caregivers at home, so more people want to be caregivers at home or can leave their job to be a caregiver at home, it seems like it's a win-win-win across the board.
One would think, and I'll add to that win-win-win equation, David, and that is quality of life. There are statistics out there. I can't point to a direct source, but I've seen the stats that say the quality of life at home is at least 3 times longer than the quality of life at a nursing home. And I mean, we've lost over 15,000 people because of COVID in nursing homes. That is a number that should shake all of us to the core. Visitation has been such a moving target. If you are getting care at home, you get to call those shots. And wouldn't you want to be calling those shots?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, in fact, I don't think there's really been any visitation, I mean, for months and months in nursing homes and assisted livings. So you're right. So at home, you can control all of those circumstances, you know, so much better.
Jamery,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to just ask you, how many times, because I know you've done a lot of these, how many times have you been forced to do a video document signing because a client is in a assisted living or nursing home and you can't get to them?
Oh, many, many times. And it's so difficult because some... You're trying to talk to someone, usually on it's like the social worker's cell phone. You're trying to Zoom or FaceTime with them and trying to explain a document for them to sign. It's extremely difficult, you know.
And nothing against the facilities. I mean, they all serve a really important purpose, and we're so happy that they're there, and not everyone could stay at home, and et cetera. Mm-hmm. But when all things are equal, come on.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and I also want to make that clear. I mean, nursing home staff have been working really hard and have had to deal with, and even hospital staff have been working extremely hard and have not always been given the proper resources. Yeah, you know, so it is nothing against them. They are doing the very best with what they have, and at times what they've had simply is not good enough. Whether that's guidance, whether that's personal protective equipment, you name it.
That's right. And when we were talking about quality of care at home, another problem with home care and the low wages is turnover, right? It's very disruptive to have staff that you get used to taking care of you at home and who then have to leave because they can't afford to stay there anymore. So with higher wages, you can have people work for you longer, rely on them to stay there and not have to, you know, leave for a better job. I know I've heard stories of consumers having, you know, personal assistants they really love and trust who just can't afford to work for them anymore.
Yeah, and there's that sort of... No worries. Hey, if we're all on the phone and we're all in three different places, invariably we're going to step on each other. Yeah.
That's right.
However, we do the best with what we have. That seems to be the theme of the year. The thing when you're hiring someone new, there's this sort of feeling in the back of your mind that says, hey, is this person going to be as good? It's kind of like, I know baseball season is upon us and we're all baseball fans, you know, to some degree, because I listen to the show and whatnot. And it's kind of like working with a different catcher. You hope that catcher is able to communicate with you as a pitcher and be on the same page, and you understand their signs, they understand how you work, that sort of thing. It's a very individualized thing. And sometimes when you're training someone new, and it's nothing against them, they may have a different skill set, and the puzzle piece just doesn't necessarily fit in correctly.
That's a great point. It's like having different employees in your business every day, and you want that consistency and that comfort level. Blaze, I was wondering, you know, we get someone approved, right? And and you're part of this wonderful program that can help with Consumer Direct and connecting some dots. Jamrie gets a client approved for a community Medicaid, and they elect to go the Consumer Direct route. What's their next step? How do they get from that moment to using your program effectively?
So they have community Medicaid. So that's Medicaid fee. That's Medicaid fee for service, right? The community Medicaid, or could that also be MLTC, Managed Long Term Care Plan?
Right. It could be either one, and they have a certain person, a family member or a friend that they'd like to be the caregiver.
Yep.
Right.
Gotcha.
And they have a representative. What are their next steps? How do they get acclimated with this program?
Sure. Yeah. I was asking that question the way I did, because depending on where your Medicaid is from, the process can be slightly different. But the general rule is you start with your Medicaid plan, and you say, I would like to use consumer-directed personal assistance. They say, okay, great. The way it works is there are two assessments. The first assessment is done by a doctor or a nurse to determine that there is a need for long-term care. This program is not a self-referring program. That's how the state legislature set it up back in the mid-90s. And then the second assessment is to determine how many hours of care you need. At that second assessment, they, meaning the plan, have to provide you a list of companies like consumer-directed choices. We are not the only game in town. However, what I will say, and I'm really not a salesy person by nature, but if I wasn't working here and was serving my services through here, I certainly wouldn't think we're the best, and we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Gotcha.
That's right. So then after they get the number of hours of care, they pick you, right, CD choices, then...
Yep.
Then who do they call? I know they're going to call in, and they're going to have an orientation with someone, right?
Right. So we get the referral from their plan. Our eligibility department, they make sure all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed, and then our program department will give the consumer or the designated representative a call, letting them know that we got everything and scheduling the orientation, just so that you get to know us, we get to know you, and this will allow you to kind of get a greater map of the program, if you will.
And they then get timesheets. Well, I'm going back when it was paper timesheets, but but in general,
so they're not.
I know, they're not anymore, so maybe you can tell us about that in a second. But it's generally timesheets that you send in for the person who works for you, And then you, or the fiscal intermediary, or you, CD Choices, sends the paychecks to the personal assistants, right?
Well, we either do checks. We either do a paper check, there's direct deposit, or there are these reloadable pay cards. And because of federal requirements that all agencies that serve the Medicaid population have to have electronic timesheets. Now, rather than really go too far down into those weeds, I will say that from my perspective as someone who is, and if you can either fill them out via a web portal or there is a way to do it on your phone and clocking in and out if you have a landline phone. So there is a way even if you don't have a computer. But the process is really so much more simplified because when we were doing paper timesheets, my aide was having to take a picture of the paper timesheet and then I would attach it to an email. Now with these electronic ones, I just go on to a web portal and I get to actually read the document with my screen reading technology, hit a checkbox to sign it, and hit the magic approve button, and I can make the edit if needed. So it really has become a four-step process to a one-step process that is a lot more friendly for not just people who are blind, but people who may have dexterity issues or trouble holding things in their hand or, you know, those sort of things. It makes life so much easier for many people with disabilities.
That's great. Blaise, we only have a couple minutes here before our break.
Yep.
You know, I think you have a pretty decent-sized audience out there who's hearing some new information and no longer hearing the Jamaree's voice and my voice, and they're probably enjoying you quite a lot. What are some final thoughts you have both about that legislation or any points you want to kind of reiterate or make sure people are aware of with this program?
Certainly. Well, the legislation is something. We have to start somewhere, even if we don't get to the 150% minimum wage. To find out more about us, go to cdchoices.org, or I'll get a pen and paper ready. I'll give you my direct contact information as well. 518-464-0810. That's our main number, and then my direct extension is 144. So again, that's 518-464-0810, extension 144. I know we've got a break here because I'm seeing we've hit the bottom of the hour here, so I'll let you do that here.
Blaise, thanks so much for joining us. It was really a pleasure.
My pleasure. All the best. Take care.
Blaise, thanks for coming.
All right, we're at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to break right here. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston.
Our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Hey, good morning. We're back. I'm Dave Kabikian.
And I'm Jean Marie Schaefer.
Jamie and I are here every weekend, or some combination of us, right, Jamie? And it's not every weekend that we have a guest speaker, but this week we absolutely did, and I'm so thankful we did. From CD Choices, that was wonderful, Jamie.
Yeah, that was great, because I know we do talk a lot about community Medicaid, but it's really great to hear it from a different aspect, right, from the program that actually runs it, you know, that gets down to the nitty-gritty. So you understand kind of how it's run once you're on the program and what you need to know about it.
And I think and you're chairman of the board, Jamie.
I am. I don't like to brag, yeah, but I'm chairman of the board there.
So. Chairman of the board. Ben, you know another chairman of the board in history, right?
That would be Frank Sinatra, chairman. Of course.
That's right.
Know, I would just say that not only was it great to have him on the program, but Blaze is also a client. So he kind of mm-hmm. looks at it from a double, you know, a double standard. He looks at it from, you know, working from it and also from receiving services. So mm-hmm. he's really, really on top of being able to, you know, help folks on both ends of that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what better way to, to continually strive to perfect the system than mm-hmm. firsthand seeing its flaws and mm-hmm. you know, seeing what can make life easier. That's great.
That's right. So, go ahead.
Sorry, Jamie, go ahead. I really wish I could see you, Jamie, because we could point to each other.
It's so hard not seeing each other. You think we'd be used to it after a year, but we're not.
So, Jamie and I, our offices are right next to each other. And, you know, we could probably just take down this wall and put, like, a plexiglass, Jamie, and then
That's
just
right.
do the radio show from in here or something like that.
That's right. We do miss seeing you, Ben.
Thank you.
In person.
We do. We absolutely do.
It's just easier all the way around because everybody can see everybody. Eye contact is really good. And, you know, as David said, finger pointing is pretty good too. Yeah, okay, you over there. So
yeah, you take this, I'll take this.
Right.
Well, I'd love to take the next phone call, and you could be our first caller by calling 518-476-5900. And it could be obviously about anything from powers of attorney to trusts to exactly what Blaze was talking about in the community Medicaid program and what CD Choices can do. You happen to have the chairman of the board of CD Choices on the radio right now in Jamie. She'd be happy to help. Jamie, I did want to bring up one thing I mentioned to you before the show. So I had a lot of times for everyone out there, we get phone calls, someone passed away and the family member is calling to say, what do I have to do? Right. Or sometimes it's, you know, I think I should be getting something from this estate and it doesn't look like I am. And I may want to litigate or get more information. And I had one of those latter phone calls, Jamie, a lovely lady down in Texas, and she was calling about dad. Right. Dad passed away and she was one of seven children. And in the will, she's getting nothing.
Mm-hmm.
However, dad isn't actually dad, Jamie. Dad is figuratively dad. Dad is mom's second husband.
Mm-hmm.
Dad didn't adopt the client, the person who called.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He didn't adopt. In fact, there were four children from a prior relationship that mom had. So mm-hmm. dad here was, he was dad to all seven kids, but because four of those kids had a biological father who was still in the picture, dad wasn't actually dad. And as you know, and I'm kind of setting you up for this, Jamie, it mm-hmm. kind of matters to be an actual child of dad, adopted or biological, because inheritance rights go with that.
Yeah, that's right. So I imagine what she was looking to do is to see if she could, either contest the will or get involved in the probate. And she really doesn't have a way to do that. When there's a probate going on, you only have to give notice to people who would inherit, right, if you had died without a will. And in this case, that would only be his biological children.
Right.
It wouldn't include her because, as you said, she's not adopted. She's not biological. So she's not required to receive notice of any proceeding. And in fact, she doesn't have standing, to contest anything because of that.
Right, and to add to that, she actually did get served with something, and it's a New York estate, and what she got was something called a notice of probate because she was a alternate beneficiary on a couple things, and there was, you know, some language tied to the ages of people, but really when it came to money, there was nothing that she was going to be getting. And I mentioned to her, you know, if you're aware of a previous will where you were getting something, well, then you yep. are an interested party and maybe there's something there. And she wasn't sure if there was a prior will. And so we were kind of going back and forth. And she happened to have a copy of the will because the notice of probate provided her with a copy of the will. And I asked her to kind of go through with me over the phone, and I was searching January to see if an attorney was a part of this will, if they supervised it, if they prepared it, because, and this is the infomercial for why you need an attorney to do estate planning documents, there's a presumption out there, rightly or wrongly, but the presumption is that everything was done the right way if there was an attorney involved in the document signing and preparation of the documents. It's a rebuttable presumption, right? You could still fight the will and say, no, Mom and Dad had no idea what was going on. But score one for using an attorney that does estate planning when you do a will, which is part of your estate plan.
Yes, that's right. They're going to presume that because an attorney supervised the signing of the will, that all the formalities were followed. With the witnesses, the two witnesses who witnessed the will, and, you know, asking the questions of the person who signed the will to make sure that he understood the will. And that's really important. As you said, that gives you an extra boost if you have an attorney do that. Many times I've had clients come in with wills that were done off the internet and they mess up the signing somehow. You know, they don't really know the rules about the two witnesses. I've seen it where they've had one of the beneficiaries be the witness to the will, which it can't be. That's a big no-no. And then that just invalidates the will. And that's sometimes what you get, you know, when you're trying to do something outside your area of expertise, right? Because you're trying to do it on the internet, you're trying to save a little bit of money. But you're going to end up paying a lot more money if you, like, for example, if you had an interested witness, right? Now the will is not valid.
Yeah. I mean, you could certainly get lucky and have it done, you know, the right way and no harm, no foul, or there wasn't any litigation or things worked out. We call that luck, right? We don't want to depend on luck. Yeah. We want to depend on good plans. Same thing goes with you know, the long-term care planning that we do, because absolutely, you know, I explain to people right now, if husband, you needed a nursing home, your house is exempt. Why? Mm-hmm. Because your wife would still be living there. That's mm-hmm. a fact, right? That's factually correct, Jamery. But things happen to wives too. Everyone gets older at the same time. And it, certainly one day down the road when there's a long-term care need, we'll look at what facts can help us. Mm-hmm. Look at what crisis plan we could do to save the most amount of money, but we're at the we're at the mercy of the fact pattern, and we didn't create the facts by creating a trust, and that's kind of the big picture what we want to do. We want to control and create our own facts for down the road.
Right, and that is the benefit of having a lawyer, is that we are going to think of all the possibilities that could happen next. Right, we're going to be thinking a few steps down the road. So, for example, in your case, the house is exempt if your spouse is living there. So some people would say, okay, then I don't need to do anything, right?
Right.
Well, no, we still recommend you protect your house by putting it in a trust, because down the road, your spouse may not be living there, right? You both may need to move out of the house at some time.
We do have webinars coming up, Jamery. Webinar Wednesday, so it's a Wednesday next week, the 31st of March. We're almost at April. I can't believe it. 10 a.m. on Wednesday, we're going to be doing a webinar called Medicaid and Estate Planning Myths, where we're going to talk about exactly some of the things you were talking about right there, Jamery. Right? There's a lot of bad information, things that are partially correct, sort of kind of maybe works out, and it becomes a myth that, oh, yeah, you could have a house and it's not a problem. when it comes to Medicaid. So that's a wonderful seminar at 10 a.m. on Wednesday the 31st. And then at 2 p.m. that afternoon, What to Do When a Loved One Dies. We don't like talking about this. It's the elephant in the room, right? You put beneficiary designations on your assets, and you have life insurance for a reason. It's, you know, tough enough to get people to talk about an estate plan, Jamer. It's even harder to talk about what is supposed to happen when mom's not here anymore. But it's so important to talk about what to do when mom's not here anymore. Everything from what to do with the safe deposit box and why it's not as safe as you think, or maybe it's too safe, to exactly what we were talking about with that phone call I had. Who's a distributee of the estate, and what does that mean? How much is this going to cost, et cetera? It's a wonderful webinar, 2 p.m. on Wednesday the 31st. We have a whole host of webinars on demand as well. Jamerie, I know you know that. And a slew of April ones coming up. If you want to register for one of the webinars, you can go to herzoglaw.com and click on the seminar page. You can call our office at 518-465-7581. You can email us at info@herzoglaw.com, or you can call Ben Patton on his cell phone. Ben, go ahead. What's your cell phone number again? Yeah, he's not there. All right. Well, I tried. So wonderful webinars coming up, Jamerie.
Yeah, wonderful. And as you said, you can watch pre-recorded webinars on there if you missed one, if it's not the right time, if you want to watch it again. That's a great idea to do that.
I'm convinced, Jamerie, that the silver lining to this whole COVID thing was our ability to get good information out to more people through these webinars. It's a small silver lining. I mean, it was a lot of pain, teeny tiny silver lining.
Well, I know we had talked for a long time about recording videos and getting them up on the web, and then boom, suddenly we became experts in it almost overnight, right?
So what's going on with you, Jamerie? Have you had any interesting clients this last week or two?
I had a great result. We had this client, one of my guardianship cases, right? Mm-hmm. We had this, the client's call was about the husband's mom, who was really experiencing some problems. I guess the only way to say it was from dementia, but she had developed this paranoia that people were breaking into her house at nighttime.
Oh, no.
constant, really bad. She kept calling security. She's in a... an independent living apartment. She kept calling the security multiple times per night. It was really an ongoing problem. But when you talk to her during the daytime, she sounds kind of reasonable, right? But at nighttime, she kind of turns into a different person. So we were able, because she was, wandering. She got out at night, so... the beauty of a guardianship is that you can apply for something called a temporary guardian order. Normally, when you apply for guardianship, it takes about 30 days or so to have a hearing. So you're talking about maybe a month or two before you can get anything done and get papers done.
Right.
But if it's sort of an emergency situation like this one is, you can go right in and ask for a temporary order to immediately do something to protect the person. Right. So that's generally when there's an immediate sense of harm. So in this case, we were able to get that immediate order, which allowed us to move her to a more secure facility so she wasn't unsafe anymore. And that happened really quickly.
Jamerie and David, we do have a caller. It is Jerry in Rensselaer.
Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Very good. Yourself? Good.
Can't complain.
I have an estate type of situation. I was appointed administrator of my sister's estate, and she passed away last year in California. And through the probate process, finally a couple months ago, I was appointed administrator and opened up an estate checking account here, locally. Now, on that particular account, there's going to be a final hearing in June in California. What can I do or not do with this? I know I have to pay the lawyer and the court, whatever fees that were involved with that probate part of it. But after this final hearing, what can I do or not do with that estate checking account to protect, if something should happen to me, what are my options?
Jerry, are you the only beneficiary of the estate?
I was a brother and the only surviving relative, correct.
So, effectively, this is now going to be your money whenever the estate formally concludes in California?
Correct.
Okay. So, I think it's less of an estate administration question, more of just more of a planning for you going forward question.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, I think you start with maybe tuning into one of these webinars or scheduling a consult with Jay Marie or myself or Debbie or Harry, because the devil's in the details. There's so many questions. I mean, we're going to run out of time on the show. We have 15 minutes, and that's not nearly going to be enough time to figure out what you have, what else you have, and some of it might not be radio appropriate. But whatever your plan is, it's a custom plan to whatever your needs are and wants are. And, you know, I don't know where you want to leave your money one day. I don't know how upset you would be if there was no money when you passed away because there was such large long-term care needs. I don't know if we're motivated to do a trust. And all those questions are just the tip of the iceberg on figuring out the right plan for you.
All right, because then when this checking account was set up or whatever, they said, I couldn't have a beneficiary on that type of account.
Because it was an estate account still.
Right, right. So
yeah.
That's what I sort of...
Jerry, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Once the once that probate's concluded, you can close the estate account and you could transfer that money to your own personal account. It's now your money, right? The estate's over. And then, you know, you could put beneficiaries on it and do whatever you want to do. It's just... Right now, it's not your account, even though you're going to be getting that money. It's not your account yet.
I understand. Okay. All right. That makes sense. So I wasn't quite sure. I just want to make sure that, you know, someone else in my family is protected, you know, that money's just not, you know, sitting out there for, and that they would have to go through some kind of a probate situation because probate is not a good thing.
That's right. You've learned the hard way, right?
Yeah, it took quite a while, but all right. Well, I appreciate your help.
Thanks so much for the call, Jerry.
Okay, thank you. Bye. Bye.
Yeah, that's for you to be our second caller. I'm sorry, Jamie. I did you point to me or did I point to you? I can't figure out this whole phone thing.
I know. I can't figure it out.
Maybe a shock bracelet or something on me would help. We'll shut down.
You get the phone number out, and then I'll say what I was going to say. All right.
Well, I was going to say those kinds of questions. At first I was thinking, well, California probate. We don't know anything about California probate. We're not going to be able to help Jerry, but he's going to be getting all this money, but it's not his money yet. And one of the things that really aggravates me about probate, nothing against probate or nothing against surrogates courts, but they have rules. And there's this, at the end of the day, he's getting 100 cents of every dollar, Jamie, right? But he's going to have to, and he has gone through all these formal steps in California, even though no matter which way this went, he was going to get 100 cents of every dollar in the estate subject to any estate creditors. So, you know, there's a lot of pomp and circumstance to a probate and a lot of procedures. Those procedures, a lot of times require you to hire an attorney. So in addition to filing fees, you have attorney's fees. And sometimes it's, well, just so that, you know, wife could have husband's money, it seems... overly complicated, and at least Jerry's at the end of that process, and he can actively make it so that his loved ones won't go through that process.
Right, that's true, and, I think once you've been through that process yourself, it really makes you not want to have your family go through that, right? And planning ahead, to make sure you don't go through probate is really important. Even if no one's going to contest it and it's not a difficult probate, it can be a year before you're able to close the estate because you need to wait that certain length of time. And that's a long time to wait, especially in this case where he's the only beneficiary. He's getting all the money, right?
It's funny. I say all the time, the problem with probate with an estate administration, it's not that there's going to be a big fight and like it's some soap opera. And the problem with probate is that when it's easy, you still got to go through all the steps, right? When it's straightforward, it still is going to cost a lot of money because really it's unnecessary money, right? It could have been so easy to avoid that process. But even when it's easy, we know what the steps are, right? You could rattle them off with your eyes closed, Jamarie, and that there's nothing we can do about the fact that it's going to stay open for a period of time, that there's going to be filing fees with the court, there's going to be different forms that are filed all along the way. The estate's got to be closed at some point. There's a procedure for that, and more likely than not, you got to use an attorney, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I did have a guardianship question for you, Jamarie, and I'm happy that Jerry called, and I'm also happy I was able to remember my question for you. So it sounds like one of the challenges you had in that guardianship, right, where obviously evenings are more difficult for people when they're in the dementia conversation, and for this woman, evenings proved to be really difficult because she was thinking that her home is being, her apartment is being broken into, et cetera. People can clean up nice, right? Like, what I mean is the court is going to, during daylight, want to talk to her or have someone meet with her. They're going to assign a guardian ad litem or an attorney to kind of evaluate her. And it's going to be during the daylight when she's got her, stuff together. And she could fake it, right?
Right.
I got to imagine that's really, really difficult. And I think that's why you're, to me it's like, oh, that seems like a relatively normal result what you got, but I'm thinking the degree of difficulty was probably pretty high because of her functionality during the day.
Yes, it was, and she was someone who dressed very nicely, looked very put together, could talk for a while without you knowing anything was wrong. So here's the good part about the guardianship process is there's a court evaluator who's involved. And the court evaluator is an independent party who works for the court, who's there to give a recommendation to court on the guardianship. But they've gone through special training, right, about elderly people and guardianships and dementia and different types of dementia. So at least they're aware of the fact that you can seem okay, but that's some dementia presents like that. So they're going to, do a little bit more digging, a little bit more investigation to look at, perhaps look at the medical records, perhaps talk to her neighbors, to really investigate the case and see what is going on. But that happens when there's, a full, like the normal guardianship where you have 30 days to do that. In this case where we had to get a temporary order, we really had to put together a petition and, that showed why we needed this immediately. So that's the tricky part here was convincing the judge that we needed this relief right away.
David Jamarie, we have another caller. We have Scott. Just went away. Just going to put him on the air and just hung up. So sorry about that. Go back to your
call back, Scott.
Sorry about that. Yeah, call back, Scott. We'll get you right on.
So, Jamarie, the reason why it's so difficult, right? And everyone out there, you should want it to be difficult. The court is taking away powers from you and giving it to someone else here temporarily from this woman to somebody else. So they're not gonna do it because Jamarie wrote an affidavit. They're gonna have an attorney get involved and do interviews, right? They're gonna look under every rock just to give the temporary guardianship, and then they're going to do, there's probably a more thorough process to get the full guardianship, because unlike the power of attorney where we're keeping powers and we're just saying, Jamarie, you can also sign for me, the guardianship saying, Dave, you can't sign for yourself anymore. You can't transact for yourself. It's all Jamarie now, which, Jamarie, that would probably be my nightmare if you were in control of all my decisions.
Oh, that would be great. Fantastic.
No. So So we'll see if Scott calls back here, Jamery, but we failed to mention it's our 75th anniversary.
That's
not
right.
Not you and me. We're not that old and we're not married. The firm has been around for 75 years.
I know. Pretty that's amazing. A great milestone. That's really pretty cool. Look forward to more events and celebrations upcoming during the year. We have to.
We've
kind
been
of
talking about them. Yeah.
Time them or think around, you know, COVID restrictions and where we'll be. But hopefully there will be some things that we can do in person, maybe later in the year. You know, for now, I guess it will still be virtual for a lot of our events. But it's exciting.
We certainly wouldn't get to 75 years without so many of the listeners and so many of our clients are listening, and they, you know, they do a trust and they keep listening and they keep listening, which is they get so informed. And this program has been such a great outlet for us to get good information to people. These webinars more recently, but it's really a testament to our staff and to our clients that you know, 75 years strong, and hopefully we'll see 100, and then maybe you and I won't see 125, but someone else will.
That's correct. And hopefully Ben's still not doing the radio at 100.
Huh? What? What are you talking about?
I think it would be very entertaining, actually, Ben, to be honest with you.
At 118? Yeah, that would be interesting.
It would truly be an elder law planning show at that point.
Yes, it would.
Actually, with all of us together, that would be great. We'd all have the volume on 11 so we could hear it well. It would be wonderful.
We'd all be sitting in the porch of a nursing home together somewhere.
So, Jamery, one more thought. I think we could squeeze it in. There looks like, you know, Blaze mentioned the budget. I was reading in the paper that it looks like there may be some changes in the New York budget that will impact New York estate tax, where the top rate for estate tax is, oh boy, that's enough of that. We'll get to it next week. Have a good weekend, guys.
All right, have a good weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.